In this session, we're going to go back to our mindfulness training. In particular, we're going to go back to the same practice that we did this morning, and that is to focus on the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils. So just a couple of brief points on the practice before we go back into the practice. The first, of course, is, I mentioned already this morning, the idea of expectations, that if you notice any sort of expectation creeping into your meditative practice, you need to let that go as quickly as possible. In fact, there's a nice little saying, I think, from Dalai Lama who said that expectation is the foundation for failure. So we tend to come into these practices with certain expectation or the reverse of expectation, some worry or anxiety that we're not going to be able to do the practice well. So that's just sort of the flip side. So remember here that we need to realize that our mind is not very well trained, and this is a long-term practice, and not looking for some sort of quick fix, and also not to have this expectation that my practice is going to be as good as it was last time, if not better. I think that generally does not happen. In the short term, you'll find your practice will sort of have a lot of ups and downs, but in the long term, then you should notice some improvement. So we don't want to have a short-term perspective and comparing our practice to yesterday or last week or even last month. We're really looking for a long-term perspective. So with that is, again, the idea of good and bad meditation. Good meditation is simply any meditation where we, to the best of our ability, try to follow the instructions as best as possible, no matter what happens. So if we have this idea, we can avoid a lot of unnecessary frustration. Together with that, of course, and I already mentioned this morning, is with this, particularly with this style of practice, you're going to have all sorts of pleasant, unpleasant, and strange physical and mental experiences arising in the practice. As the subtle energies start to balance out, you'll notice all sorts of subtle sensations in the body, all sorts of different experiences, also a lot of mental activity. So with all of these sorts of mental activity, physical activity, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or strange, don't get caught up in it. There's very much great danger that if we have some blissful sensations in the body or some blissful state of mind, that we get caught up in craving and attachment to that and try to recreate it. Or if we have some strange or unpleasant physical sensations in the body or strange or unpleasant mental events, to get caught up in aversion to that. So we don't want to get caught up in attachment and aversion to our pleasant and unpleasant experiences. Otherwise, our whole practice will come to a grinding halt. As with everything, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, let it go, let it go, let it go, let it go, and simply come back to the practice, come back to the breath. Also here, of course, then in this practice, in terms of our motivation, it's very important to keep in mind our motivation for the practice and try to make that motivation as expansive as possible. If we can include others in our motivation, that we're not just doing this practice for ourselves, but we're doing this so that we can also be of more benefit to others. So if we can keep that in mind, a more expansive motivation, you'll find that particularly if things get a little bit difficult, we're going to persevere more in the practice because we're not just doing it for ourselves, we're also doing it for others as well. And that is going to give us a lot of fuel for our practice as well. So that's just a few things that I thought I'd mention. One more thing, of course, particularly with this practice of focusing here. Again, make sure that because it's a very subtle object, there can be a natural tendency of really clamping down to focus more tightly. So remember that relaxation. Keep very relaxed, relaxed, relaxed. If you notice any sensations around the forehead or around the eyes, then really on the out-breath, relax, 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 relax. Don't continue focusing in that tight or tense way. If you can't really relax yourself and you have a lot of tension here, then simply move back to focusing on the abdomen or full body. bring the attention down lower and really work on relaxation. Also, of course, to not manipulate the breath. There can also be a great tendency in this practice to make the breath more forceful so that you can pick up sensation. So resist that urge and just patiently stay here, even if you don't notice really any sensations. The more patiently you stay there, you'll start to pick up some sort of sensations in this area. Okay? And then the last point, of course, is if you're heavily distracted, and you find that counting the breath or even noting the breath, if you find that helpful, then bring it in. You don't need to use it the whole session, but if you find you get heavily distracted, bring it in for a few minutes, counting or noting the breath, if you find it helpful, until you stabilize and then let go of it and then just focus on the breath. If you don't find counting or noting of the breath really helpful at all, then forget about it. Don't need to use it. Okay. So let's do the practice, and then I've got a few more things to mention after the practice. Okay. So finding a nice comfortable posture again. So again, if you want to use the corpse posture, Shavasana, or sit in a chair, that's fine. We begin by preparing the body, setting it into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. preparing the mind, setting it in a state of ease and relaxation. In particular, letting go of any expectations for this meditation. And simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment. Simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Now narrow your focus and focus on the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils, maintaining an ongoing flow of mindfulness throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally, not trying to manipulate the breath in any way. Keeping all the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. find that you're becoming agitated or distracted, then use the out-breath as an opportunity to relax, to release any distraction, and very gently return to focusing on the breath. Or if you find that you're becoming dull or spaced out, then use the in-breath as an opportunity to arouse and refresh your focus on the breath. anyone have any questions or comments about practice? Everyone has single-pointed concentration on the breath. Yeah, then maybe you can try to meditate with the eyes slightly open from the beginning. I mean, this is one of the things I'm going to mention now, is that when we do this practice at home, we can adjust the conditions where we meditate, so that if we have our eyes open, then we can have the right amount of light that suits us, whether it's too dark or too light, and also what's in front of us. Because if we have the eyes open and there's some movement in front of us, so what we can do, of course, at home is we can do a little bit the Zen approach and have like just a blank wall in front of us. And then we can have the eyes open, and then there's nothing really to attract our attention. So then we don't have the... So if we have, of course, some little altar or something with a flickering candle, then it's just going to attract our attention, or there's some movement there, or even if there's too much color, we can have the tendency to move around. So this is something also I'm going to speak a little bit more about in tomorrow's practice, about the eyes having it open. But this is something we can certainly adjust when we are at home to make the conditions suitable for our needs. Anything else? Sure. The what, sorry? The sound. Yeah, I mean, this can happen, as I said, and to not make a big deal of it. And also, of course, the more we get absorbed into the breath, then the less we identify with the physical body and our mental. And so we're just then getting connected with the breath itself. And then the breath can really take on the sort of entirety of our awareness. So then this sort of things can happen. But again, don't make a big deal out of it. Don't sort of get caught up in all sorts of visualizations, or just, it's okay. I mean, these things will have come and go in the practice. It's okay. That's fine. Yeah. I really don't know much about Zen Buddhism, but just maybe a few words. Within the various Buddhist traditions, and there are many of them, we can broadly group them into sort of two groups, two categories, which are called the Theravada traditions and then the Mahayana traditions. The Theravada traditions are sort of like Sri Lanka, Burma, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, these sorts of countries. And in the Theravada traditions, there's a lot of emphasis on striving for liberation, personal liberation, nirvana. In the Mahayana traditions, which includes Chinese, Buddhism, Zen, Korean, Tibetan, Mongolian, Vietnamese. In these traditions, in the Mahayana, there's more this emphasis on enlightenment and benefiting others, to try and help others to be free of suffering as well. So therefore, Zen and Tibetan Buddhism are sort of in the same grouping. But within, of course, even within the Mahayana grouping, each of the different traditions will have their own sort of perspective of practice. And some of that perspective is coming from the cultural influences of the country. And Zen has a very sort of direct approach to practice, you know, this sort of direct approach. Sometimes in Zen, I think you hear about this sort of instant enlightenment. And this sort of, this direct approach also often, in Tibetan Buddhism, we can talk about four schools, what's called the Nyingma, Kagyu, Gelug, and Sakya schools. And within those, sometimes the Nyingma and Kagyu schools also have a little bit more of a sort of a direct approach to the practice. So there can be a little bit similar in that way. But more than that, I really don't have so much understanding or experience with Zen practice. I think they have, certainly what I understand is they have a very strict discipline when it comes to meditative practice, very strict. So they have a lot of strict discipline as well in their meditative practice. Anything else anyone would like to bring up? Okay, just a couple of comments then before we break for dinner. So in the this mindfulness training, then the two main imbalances, of course, that we're trying to overcome is the dullness and the distraction. So with both of those, of course, then prevention is the best cure to prevent. So with both dullness and distraction, there are certain things we can do to minimize the likelihood of them arising in our meditative practice. So I'll just mention a few of those things. Of course, posture is important. So particularly with the posture, to have a nice, stable, comfortable posture and have the back nice and straight. Because if the back is not nice and straight, you're sort of hunched over like this and head is down, then of course dullness is very likely to occur. Or if the back is too rigid and too head is too upright, maybe some agitation. So just nice, comfortable, straight back. The head a slightly downward angle, so that posture is going to be helpful to avoid the dullness and distraction. Also the eyes, we mentioned a little bit. If we're the sort of person that very easily gets very dull, probably a good idea to have them slightly open. If we're the sort of person that gets highly agitated often, maybe we can have them less open or even slightly closed, so that we can adjust. Also the lighting where we meditate in the room. If we're the sort of person who gets very dull, maybe to have more light in the room. If we're a person who gets agitated, less light, less dim, more dim in the room. Also the temperature of the room. If the temperature of the room is too warm, dullness. Too cold, maybe some agitation. Same with the clothing then. We have too much clothing, we're too warm, again dullness. Not enough clothing, we're a little bit cold, we might get a bit agitated. So these things, and of course the ventilation in the room, if it's very stuffy and hot, then also this can affect. So these things that we can adjust in where we meditate at home. Of course also sleep is important. Unfortunately in our modern society we tend to have very busy lives and we never seem to have enough time for everything. So where we tend to often cut is we cut the sleep. We cut the sleep, less and less sleep, and we somehow seem to manage on that. But, of course, when it comes to meditation, if we don't get enough quality sleep, then dullness is certainly going to set in. So we need to make sure that we get enough quality sleep when we meditate. And also, of course, the timing of the meditation can be very important. Not a good idea to meditate straight after a big meal. Again, I think dullness will certainly set in if that's the case. So therefore, usually it's most recommended to meditate early in the morning, just after we wake up, nice and fresh, and also nice and quiet generally where we stay. So also, particularly this mindfulness training, if we can really find a place to meditate that is quiet, minimize the noise impact around us, and so again, generally early in the morning, the less amount of noise for meditation. And so here, then, again, meditating early in the morning, and also very helpful to meditate at the same time every morning to make it a habit. If we keep changing the time, then it's difficult to develop the habit, and one of the most difficult things with meditation practice is simply to begin to develop a habit. Also, in terms of the duration of the meditation, is going to be very helpful for preventing dullness and distraction. So I mentioned a couple of times already, quality over quantity. To emphasize quality over quantity, so as a beginner, to really keep the meditations very short, to avoid just simply drifting into dullness and distraction. Because if we meditate too long, we simply are going to, towards the latter half of the meditation, simply drift into dullness or distraction. And if we allow that to happen, then we're actually increasing our habit of becoming dull and distracted. So we're working against what we're trying to achieve. How long to meditate will depend on us as an individual, depending on our level of capacity. But in general, as a beginner, often sort of 20, 25 minutes can be a good number for many people. Some of us may find that a little bit too long, maybe a little bit less. Some of us may be able to meditate a little bit longer than that in an effective way. One measure of how long to meditate is our enthusiasm to meditate the same at the end of the meditation as it was at the beginning. If our enthusiasm is dropping off, then we're probably meditating too long, then to make it shorter. If we really want to meditate longer each morning, but we can't sustain it, then break the session into two or even to three parts. So if we really can commit to, say, meditating 45 minutes every morning, but we can't sustain 45 minutes, then break it into like two 20-minute sessions with a little like two-minute break in the middle. So that's going to be very helpful to prevent dullness and distraction. Also, within the meditation session, to have a fixed amount of time is very much recommended. So you can even have a little timer or a clock to set a time. And then when the time is up, we stop. If we don't have a fixed amount of time, a couple of things can happen. One is that on days where we're finding it a little bit difficult, we'll just stop. So we may be meditating 5 or 10 minutes, then things are very difficult, we're really agitated or distracted or bored, and we go, okay, I'll just stop. That's not a good thing to happen, because one of the things we need in any sort of spiritual path or any practice is perseverance. So if we are simply stopping or giving up when things get a little bit difficult, we're not developing any perseverance, we're still becoming staying the slaves of our mind. So if we set a certain amount of time with a timer, even on days where things are a little bit difficult, we will persevere until the time is up. So that's going to help strengthen our perseverance for difficult situations. Equally well, on days when things are going well, if we don't set a timer, then often what we do, of course, is we're meditating very nicely, so we simply can keep meditating. And then, of course, we keep meditating until we get caught up in dullness and distraction. And then we stop. And then the thing we remember most about meditative practice is how it ended. Not the 20 minutes where it was going well, the 5 minutes at the end where we were dull and distracted or agitated or frustrated. Then we're going to start to associate meditation with not good experiences. We're not going to want to meditate again. We're not going to be enthusiastic to meditate the following day. Whereas if we set a timer and we finish on a good note, that's what we remember, we'll be enthusiastic to sit down and meditate the following day. So for these reasons, it's very helpful to have a fixed amount of time. But of course, as in the practice, as we start to progress and improve in the practice, we will need to extend that time a little bit. But if we're, say, meditating 20 minutes and then things are going well after some weeks or months, we really can sustain that easily, then we don't want to jump from 20 to 40 minutes. Usually recommended 3 to 5 minutes, so maybe we can extend it to 25 minutes, work with that for some weeks or months until we really comfortably do that and feel we can do a little bit more, and then maybe go to 30 and so on. In this way, we can slowly extend the amount of time we meditate. And then, of course, another thing that's helpful for preventing dullness and distraction is our diet and exercise. So very helpful to have a healthy diet and also to have some exercise as well. So we have look after the body, because if we're not looking after the body, then we're either going to get very sluggish, or if we're having, for example, a lot of sugar in our diet, we're probably going to get a lot of agitation in our meditation. So very important also to look after our body. And we can do that in terms of diet, physical exercise, and we can also look after our body at a more subtle level, doing sort of yoga, tai chi, qigong, that sort of work as well. So that's going to be very helpful as well, because subtle energies in our body also are going to have an impact on the state of our mind. So if we can do some sort of subtle body work as well, this can be very helpful to balancing subtle energies in the body. So these sorts of things can be very, very helpful. As an example, I read an article where a person said that there was a study done where they had two groups of meditators, and what they did in the study was for 6 months, one group did gym work associated with meditation, the other one did no physical work. And then they had two group leaders for the meditative groups, but they didn't tell the group leaders which group was doing the gym work and which wasn't. And then at the end of the 6 months, the group leaders had to sort of evaluate which group had progressed the most in their practice, and they both agreed that the group who had done the gym work had progressed most in their practice. So we shouldn't underestimate the benefit of really doing some sort of body work, whether it's gym work or swimming or yoga or whatever, to really try to look after the body. That's going to be very helpful for our meditative practice as well. Okay. And of course, also the other thing, particularly actually with both dullness and distraction, that's going to be very helpful for prevention is to really reflect on the benefits of the practice. This is also going to be helpful with laziness. If we can really reflect on the benefits of the practice and really appreciate that this practice is going to bring us a lot of benefit, that's going to be very helpful in terms of overcoming laziness with the practice, but also it's going to help us to remain enthusiastic within the meditation, to help us avoid simply drifting into being spaced out or dull or getting caught up in some distractions as well. So that's some of the things that we can do is preventions. And then in terms of curing dullness and distraction, then of course we need to first work on improving our introspection, our ability to monitor our mindfulness. And the more we strengthen our mindfulness, you'll find the more our ability to monitor that will also improve. So as our introspective ability improves, we'll be able to catch this dullness and distraction more and more quickly. You may notice in the initial phases sometimes we end up getting spaced out and dull or distracted for quite some period of time before we notice we're even dull or distracted. But that's only because we haven't really developed our introspective ability, this introspection. But that will strengthen as we do more practice. And then again, to help us to overcome the dullness and distraction, then we need to simply, when we notice that we're distracted, simply reapply the mindfulness. We should reapply the mindfulness on the object, but not in a tense and tight way. Because often the tendency can be, when we're caught up in dullness and distraction, is to more forcibly clamp down on the object. So we need to resist that. Just gently reapply our mindfulness to the object. So that's all I wanted to mention in terms of prevention and cure for dullness and distraction. Any last question about that before we go for dinner? Generally. I mean, of course, if we have a job where we do shift work or something, then sustaining early morning may be difficult because we may be at work or something. So in those sort of cases, yes. But I mean, in general, if we can really have the same time every day to meditate, then it more easily becomes a habit. If on top of that we want to meditate at some other time of the day in a more informal way, that's okay as well. But in general, if we can manage to have a set period of time each day, but of course if something changes in our work and so forth, and then we have to shift to another time, then use that time. That can also work as well. Sure. So again, we're all individuals. We all have different responsibilities and commitments. And so, of course, if we have a more leisurely lifestyle and we don't have to work or work very little or so forth and have little family commitments, then we can then put more meditative practice into our daily life. And so that would really depend on our individual circumstances. But on top of that, and I think I already mentioned this before, is what would be very helpful is on a regular basis, or semi-regular, I mean at least a couple of times a year if possible, to do a little bit more intensive like retreat, to spend, you know, a week or 10 days doing a little bit more retreat or even a long weekend or a weekend. And in general, as a beginner with the retreats, it's very much helpful to do it in a group setting where particularly it's being led a little bit like this, where it's being led, it's a lot easier and you get a lot of group energy. You know, there's a fixed schedule. You just basically have to turn up and so forth. If we try to do just personal individual retreats, we'll find it from the beginning may be quite difficult because we don't have the discipline. We have to guide ourselves and so forth, and it's quite difficult. So it's very helpful to begin in the group environment to do some group retreats first, to get familiar with that, and once we become more stable in our practice, then we can start to do a little bit of individual retreat. And one thing we can do that some people I know do is if their weekly schedule is not too heavy, then sometimes they take out one day in the week or half a day, like a whole morning, and devote that to meditation and reflection and reading and so forth. So have that as like a quiet time, you know, maybe one morning a week, where you spend the entire morning doing a little bit more meditation, a bit more reading, a bit more contemplation, and remaining quiet, you know, switching off the mobile phone, not answering your phone, and just sort of being in your own little private space. So sometimes people who have not so heavy commitments in their life can also, this can be very helpful, because even that short time of half a day can really give us a boost and really keep us focused. So even that, once a week, half a day, can be very, very helpful and beneficial as well. So that's something we can do if we have the possibility to do that. Yeah. So again, like if we say do some sort of physical exercise, it depends on us a little bit as an individual and the type of exercise. If the sort of exercise is the type of exercise that sort of wakes us up and makes us more alert, then maybe we can do a little bit of exercise before the morning practice, maybe a bit of yoga, a bit of stretching before. If, of course, that type of exercise makes us completely agitated or half asleep or so forth, then maybe we can do it after. So it really depends on us as an individual, our physiology, and it depends on the type of exercise that we're doing and so forth. So that's something that you can sort of play around with. Sorry, didn't catch. To consume. Oh, not to vegetarian. Is this a question or? Ah, okay. Yeah. So, of course, in general, I think in any spiritual path or even in any meaningful life, we try to reduce our negative impact on others and the environment and the world at large. And so, of course, that we can practice at many, many levels. You know, so it depends on our capacity, really. I mean, of course, at the very basic level, we would not sort of do grievous bodily harm to other people. If we do that, of course, we get arrested usually. So then we can go up the scale of not then harming any animals directly. Then we can go another level up of not harming animals indirectly by becoming vegetarian. Then we can go even another level of becoming vegan. Then we can even go into eating only organic produce. But even then we can understand even organic produce, some bugs are being, animals, you know, anything dug out of the ground, worms are being killed, so we maybe shouldn't eat anything dug that's grown in the ground. Any grains that are harvested, probably bugs are being killed in the harvesting process, so maybe we shouldn't eat any grains. Maybe we should just become a fruitarian and eat fruit that drops from the trees, but even then, some bugs maybe get squashed, so maybe we shouldn't eat anything at all. In fact, maybe we shouldn't even walk out the door because we may accidentally step on a bug, and maybe we should put a mask on our face because we accidentally swallow a fly or mosquito. So, of course, this is the whole gradient. I mean, the reality is that we can't live in this world without some sort of, at least indirect harm to others or sentient beings in general. So what we should try to do is, at whatever practical level we can manage, is reduce our negative impact. So if we can do that by becoming vegetarian, vegetarian. If we can do that by becoming vegan, then vegan. But of course, in many places, being a vegan is not really is very difficult to do because of what's available, or even organic. Maybe in many countries, to become organic would be extremely difficult unless you live on your own farm and produce everything yourself. So these things, depending on our conditions and also the physiology in our body, we can try to reduce the negative impact as much as possible. And that's all we can do. Right? Okay. Yeah. Sometimes this energy is more about tension, more agitation than energy, you know. Usually at the end of the day we don't tend to have a lot of energy, we're quite tired. But often the energy we feel at the end of the day is not so much energy, it's more about agitation and tension, because we've been agitated and tense and our body is sort of vibrating with this tension. So of course then, this sort of meditation here, this mindfulness practice, can be very helpful, particularly the Shavasana position, to release that tension and tightness in the body. So that can be very helpful as a way of releasing that tightness or tension that's being built up through the day's activities. So this can be very, very helpful for that. Okay, let's stop there. It's dinner time. And then we'll come back at 7:30 for the evening session. So I want to add a little bit to our evening practice that we did yesterday evening. Otherwise, we'll do the similar practice this evening.